Hello, everybody, and welcome to the WDW Main Street Podcast. This podcast is being brought to you by Elite Vacation Homes. If you need a home in the Central Florida area to visit any of the theme parks, contact Elite Vacation Homes at elitevacationhomes.com. The show's also being brought to you by David's Vacation Club Rentals. If you want to stay at any of the DVC properties, contact David's at dvcrequest.com. Show's also being brought to you by Scooter Vacations. If you need a scooter for any of the theme parks or anywhere in the Central Florida area, contact Scooter Vacations at scootervacations.com. And last but not least, American Tourist Travel. Let us book all your travel needs, especially Disney. You can find us at americantouristtravelagency.com. Now come on, guys, let's hop on the train and head over to the pub.
Your attention, please. The Walt Disney World Railroad, now boarding for a scenic trip around the Magic Kingdom. Board!
WDW Main Street Podcast. I'm joined as always by my good buddy Dan. Hey Dan, pull up a stool.
Hey Doug, how you doing tonight?
Very good. We're also joined by our good buddy John Peters. How you doing tonight, John?
Just peachy. How you guys?
We're doing good because we're having a lot of Victory beers tonight at the bar. We have the co-founder Bill Kowalski from Victory Brewing Company. How you doing, Bill?
I'm really happy to be joining you guys here on the bar stool this evening. It's a comfortable spot to be.
Well, we actually have a real bar tonight. Usually it's a fictitional bar, but tonight it's real. Tonight I'm drinking a Victory Helles.
Okay.
That's my favorite of all your beers. I know Dennis and John both have beers. What do you have tonight, Dennis?
Right now I am about to crack open a Golden Monkey in the can, by the way.
And John, what are you armed and dangerous with?
I'm hitting one of those Hop Devils that you're not allowed to drink anymore. They're Doug, why don't you tell Bill why you can't drink a Hop Devil?
Oh no.
No, we were at the bar. We were in your establishment a couple weeks ago. We were in there on a Good Friday, and mm-hmm. I'm so sorry. We had a waiter. I can't think of his name. He was blonde hair with a beard. He was phenomenal. I mean, he was so good. He was so informative of every beer that you guys have on the menu. And it was such a great time. And we did the beer flight. And the thing of it was my wife liked the Hop Devil until she knew what the name was. Because of the devil in it, she didn't want to drink no more of the Hop Devils.
Yep. So, and on Good Friday of all times, too.
Exactly.
Living pretty dangerously in a safe place, so I'm glad we kept you safe.
Yes, because I had your flagship flight. Because I love the Helles, so I knew I would, I could finish because I had a cheeseburger. You heard everything I said was phenomenal in the restaurant. But I wanted the Helles to finish off my meal, and I figured I would try the other beers while we were waiting. And we both liked that a lot, and you're right. I didn't even think about it being Good Friday, Bill. I could have gotten in real trouble.
Yeah, well, you didn't get chased home by any lightning bolts, so you did well. And that's – the flagship flight is a really good one to try because you hit all the high points, right? You know, all the things that are popular with folks. It's a really great flight to enjoy. And the Hop Devil is a really nice way to end that. I mean, I know you went back to the Helles because it's so comfortable, but the Hop Devil's just bold in flavor. But with the use of our German Vienna roasted malt, it has that really nice, rich, caramely finish after all the hops. And so it's a pretty comfortable beer.
No, they were all really good. Like I said, my favorite two are actually Golden Monkey and Helles. They're my two go-to of the Victory brews. And we've been trying a little bit of everything. I had the Harvest Brew the other night. Mm-hmm. And Dennis has been grabbing them up in Boston area. He's been finding your beers. He's been rooting for them. He can't get Helles up there, but he will get around to it. He hasn't found that one yet, but he's been enjoying trying everything.
Well, Bill, I was just going to say, the Victory Beer Finder that's right on your website. That is awesome. Yeah, because, you know, Doug was telling me, you know, look for this and look for that. And, I went back on your site. I had missed it the first time I was on it. And I just popped in my zip code, and it was set for within 5 miles. And I had four or five different establishments that were selling, you know, some of the Victory beer or some of the lines. So I was easily able to kind of go around and pick up a few beers to try. So I would recommend anyone to use that beer finder because it seemed to be very accurate.
Yeah, we're proud of how it works. It uses basically sales data going from our wholesaler to the retailer. So it's accurate within about 30 days. And usually that's good enough to have something fresh on the shelf for sure. Sometimes that's a little bit long to catch everything on draft at pubs, but I know that the retailers also really appreciate it because, you know, it's a way to get folks in for a specific product that they're looking for. So the goal is to not frustrate people, right? You want your consumers to be happy at all times.
Yes, and I was very happy after I found the beer finder and found the actual beer.
Excellent.
It's nice because, like, with us, we were speaking, like, we love Golden Monkey. We like getting it at the Dawa Bar in the Animal Kingdom. So little things like that, because us being Disney nuts, we grab a Golden Monkey, and it takes us back to being in the parks, if you follow me. I'm out barbecuing, cooking something on the grill. I grab a Golden Monkey. It makes me think I'm down at Disney World again.
That's a great escape, isn't it? You know, you leave there with such great memories. And, you know, if a simple sip of beer can reignite them, that's a wonderful thing.
Absolutely. And you guys are all up and down the East Coast. It's really nice that you've gone that far down to Disney World. It's nice to have your beer in our home away from home.
We appreciate being a part of that for sure. And, you know, I've got some interesting stories of it always amuses me, let's say, when I get a text or a call from one of my friends who's down in the Animal Kingdom and they're like, you won't believe what I just found. I don't want to burst their bubble because at that point I know exactly what it is they're calling me about. But, I let them tell their story. And, there's some really good stories. You know, it's I think more than a few have found it to be a dose of perhaps liquid courage before Expedition Everest.
It doesn't hurt. It doesn't hurt. Or dinosaur, either one or the other.
Now, Bill, let me ask you if you care to share or you can share. Was it a big effort to get on Disney property, or how did that happen? Or is it just good salesmanship? Or what's the backstory behind getting your product in the Animal Kingdom?
Good salesmanship and good product. That's always worked for us. Obviously, any account has to be very selective. They can only have so many taps or so many placements. But I know that the fact that this beer is related to a monkey certainly was another angle that was played in order to get it to appear at the Animal Kingdom. That is really our best-selling beer overall, but it really does well in Florida. Florida has found a real place in its heart for Golden Monkey. So when it comes to the salesmanship, if you can convince to a buyer that it's having success in other accounts around you, well, then it makes it a lot easier, right? You've got a pretty good argument for it.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, I wondered if that was the case, that the fact that it's, you know, monkeys in the name, if it helped in the Animal Kingdom specifically. Because I don't know, we were talking a little bit about it before the show, what other places it might be available on property outside of the Animal Kingdom, but within Walt Disney World. Do you actually know, or are you not
I
sure?
I don't. I think we've had some placements in some of the restaurants, but...
I know it's available over in the Polynesian. I know you can get it over there. I'm for sure of that. And I think there's a couple other places that it is in the parks. So
yeah, I looking it up, I think both the Swan and the Dolphin, they both have the Hop Devil and the Golden Monkey at different times of the year. They kind of rotate them in and out. So that's the two that they and Bill being down here in Florida, I wanted to take some claim for rising that Golden Monkey up to I've been ever since I tried it about 6 months ago in the Animal Kingdom. I've been chasing that down everywhere I can find it. So it's quickly become one of my favorite beers. So
Well, Judd, I kind of thought it was more than just one guy, but you're doing a great job. And...
Believe me,
I'm
Bill.
I'm doing my part. I know that. So.
He's keeping you in business alone down there.
I'm not sure about that. Come on, he's sitting here talking with us, so he obviously can behave himself.
Yeah, he that's why he had a couple of them last night, so he's being good tonight. He's trying something different.
So, yeah, I wouldn't recommend slamming that entire six pack of Golden Monkey in one night. That's probably not a good idea.
Neither would I, as brewmaster. It was not designed for that kind of abuse.
No, absolutely not.
So, Bill, why don't you give us a little of the backstory, how Victory came about? I mean, we all know, but let our listeners know.
Well, you know, it could be stated that Victory began on a school bus in 1973 because it was actually, those were the circumstances under which myself and my business partner, Ron Barchet, met. That was in Pennsylvania, about 20 miles from our original brewery, the one in Downingtown that you had visited, Doug. And
can't wait to get back.
We welcome you. So, you know, typical sort of suburban growing up, played ice hockey together, did all the fun things that kids will do. And it wasn't until post-college when I had been helping my dad homebrew. My father was born in the coal regions of Pennsylvania, right on the heels of the Depression. So he was a very resourceful guy, as you might imagine, amazing gardener, canner, pickler. And so when homebrewing became legal under the Carter administration, he jumped right on that because he was interested in replicating the European quality lagers that he couldn't always afford. And he did a darn good job of it with me as his bottle washer. So after college in 1985, I sort of commandeered his homebrewing kit and gave one to Ron as a Christmas gift. And that was sort of the end of our original careers. At the time, I was an art director working in advertising, and he was working in financial analysis on government contracts. And step by step, we just let our hobby take over from our careers.
Well, one of the good things is with you being an artist and him knowing about finance, you could design the labels and he could sell the beer for the price to put it, you know, how to sell it.
and that's pretty much how it worked, actually, in the early days. In the intervening years, in order to get the experience we needed, we both worked at a brew pub, unfortunately, one that's now closed, in Baltimore, Maryland, called Baltimore Brewing Company. That was started by a German-trained Dutch brewmaster by the name of Theo de Groen. And Theo took Ron on first as an apprentice. That gave Ron a year's worth of experience, which then he took to study abroad at the Technical University of Munich at Weihenstephan in Germany. And then I jumped into his soggy brewer's boots and worked at Baltimore Brewing Company for 5 years. And for a portion of that, I went to the Domens Institute in Munich and graduated with the International Course in Brewing Studies certificate.
Oh, that's awesome, though, that two good friends could make this all happen. I mean, I bet it makes it so wonderful as you look back over the years of being able to do all this. I mean, you guys have a great product, and you should be proud of yourselves.
Well, you know, thank you. We are. And it also just points out, too, that, you know, the power of more than one. It took two of us to bring the skills and the vision and the labor to bring this together. But, of course, then it relied on friends and family investors and wonderful employees, of which we have nearly 350 on our team at all three brewery restaurants. So, you know, individual vision and effort is important, but you got to have friends and you got to be able to share that vision.
Bill, did I see that correctly, that the Christmas gift that you gave your partner was a Mr. Beer homebrew kit? Was that correct?
Mr. Beer homebrew kits didn't exist in 1985, to my knowledge. So what we were brewing on were, you know, the glass carboys with the plastic airlocks and you know, at first got into the extract brews, not even the full mash brews. And of course, we graduated step by step along the process.
I was going to ask you, Bill, so I always like a story about somebody chasing their dreams, which you guys did. Were you married then or going steady with your wife now? And I just wonder how, you know, they obviously were supportive because look right. at where you got to. But, you know, a lot of people, when you're in the infancy of doing something like that, say, what are you, crazy? You have a degree in art. You could be doing this or that. I mean, you know, how did that kind of go?
That's a great question, actually. I appreciate that, Dennis. I was talking about team. And, you know, your spouse, your significant other is going to be an important member of your team for sure. Ron and I both got married 2 weeks apart from one another. So you can see how closely we related are on certain things. We were both the best men at one another's wedding. So my wife, let's see. Our weddings were in September of 92.
You better get this one right, Bill.
And we started writing our business plan on New Year's Day, more or less, of 1994, because it was that night before that the four of us, ourselves and our wives, were all together at the house I was renovating in Baltimore at the time. And we had opened up a couple bottles of strong Belgian ale, Chimay it was. And after maybe bottle number four, we had the courage to ask our wives if maybe they would let us consider making the jump from being employed brewers to on our own brewers. And they said yes, fortunately.
Wow, that's a great story. And like I said, look where you are now. So it was a leap of faith, but, you know, it turned out wonderfully.
Well, you know, not to get too down to the details, but Dennis, my wife, Sunny, is an engineer by training and an electrical engineer. And so as Ron and I were pulling our pennies together for all of our startup equipment, one of the things that we figured that we could have her create for us was the software for the fermentation temperature control system. So, you know, we told her what parameters we were looking for, how it should function, what it should do. And she wrote the code. It was a DOS program back in 1995, running on 286s. And, you know, honestly, we only gave up on that software when we started running out of 286s and 486s that we could commandeer, because the equipment was just passing, you know, it was passing away.
Yeah. Hope she gave you a discount.
Yeah. A true team.
Don't say that too loud. I'm at home.
A true team and family effort.
I will say one thing, though, Bill. The artwork on these labels is really cool. I mean, if you really look at them, I wonder if people collect the artwork themselves for all these beers. Do you have any customers that just ask for the labels or anything like that?
Oh, you know, the label collecting is a global phenomenon. So we get a lot of requests all the time for that. But yeah, there's certainly local people that collect the cans and the bottles and the labels. But more importantly, we generate a fair amount of wearable stuff, hats and T-shirts and things. And I think that that's the collectible item that most of our fans really like to wear proudly.
Yeah, I popped in the store. I got a little swag. I'm wearing some Victory.
You're looking good in it.
Yes, I am. As good as I could possibly look. It's hard to make this look good, but I try. So, John, do you have any questions for Bill?
Yeah, Bill, what was when you first started brewing and stuff, what was the first one that you shot? You know, what was your first big beer that you wanted to really go after? You mentioned Chimay before, and that's one of my favorites, and I really like your Golden Monkey. I love those Belgian triples like that. But what were you shooting for when you first started brewing?
Well, our Bible at the time was Charlie Papazian's home brewing text, So we were really sort of enamored of hops at the time. We had been exposed to Sierra Nevada Pale Ale and some of the wonderful stuff from like the Deschutes Brewery on the West Coast. Believe it or not, the Blitz Weinhardt Brewery had a Henry Weinhardt's beer that was sort of like Sam Adams-esque and hoppy as well. So those were the things that excited us beyond the European lagers that we got exposed to. So we embraced the hops pretty quickly, actually, John. The Belgian ales were later in our career when we had better control of the fermentations. You know, it's a lot of homebrewers have success with lots of dark malt and lots of bitter hops to start with because they can mask some of the oversights perhaps in fermentation. But then as you get better on the process and more skilled at it and you control the fermentation, then you can sort of dial everything in so that the hops are playing a supporting role and not an over-the-top role. So short answer to your question was we kind of jumped into pale ales and IPAs right away.
So, good deal.
And what is your go? What flavor are you liking right now? Like, what are you leaning towards drinking right now, Bill? Do you switch around, or do you go from you get in the mood for one for a while, then go to another? What do you prefer?
Well, that was the sound of a golden monkey, so I'm joining.
I hear you have the cans also,
beer, right? You know, the beers are really sort of children, right?
Yeah,
you got to love them all equally.
And nah, so, you always end up liking one child more than the other. You know that. You love them all the same, but you end up liking one a little bit more sometimes.
Yeah,
and it goes in phases. Sometimes this one's good this month, this one's good that month. That's the way I was putting it.
You take them all to the park and you're spending good money on them and everyone's having a good time except for one of them, right? And then you got to get in line. But now the one that is nearest and dearest to my heart is our Prima Pils. Again, remember, my dad was big on the European lagers, and some of them were pretty hoppy back in, you know, the 70s still, believe it or not. And I guess I sort of got accustomed to that flavor, and I've been through many different phases. I love a wide array of beers, but when it comes right down to it, the victory beer that I have enjoyed the most of would be Prima Pils. It's 5.3% alcohol, so it's not over the top in that respect, and it just delivers so much refreshment and flavor without being, you know, overly assertive.
Well, that's why I like the Helles. Like, it's a lighter beer for me. I'm on the tractor. I'm working out in the yard. I just want to have a beer or two, and I just love the flavors of that. It's light. I could have two or three and still function if you follow me. That's why I like it. It's a great beer.
Great choice. You know, I'm right with you. Maybe my home brewing experiences and maybe that made me want a little bit more hop profile, but I'm happy to be right there on the tractor with you drinking a Helles any day.
Yeah, cuz it's like it's a little bit elevated from your other lagers, in my opinion, like the flavor profile of it. I just enjoy that. So that's why it's my go-to. I mean, I've had multiple. Who's the Phillies fan with the summer love?
Well, we all are Phillies fans to some extent. Come on, you know.
But the point is, you guys are Pittsburgh, Philadelphia, you know, you go back and forth. I was just curious, who's the Phillies fan or the Pirates fan?
Well,
or both.
Love, let me just get the first question out of the way. Summer Love kind of came on the scene in 2009 or 10. Mm-hmm. So Philadelphia was pretty high on the Phillies at that point.
Yeah,
in time,
Ryan,
right?
Howard, Chase Utley, my boys.
You got it. So, you know, not that we're not today, but there was a real fever in the air. Mm-hmm. We're so far removed from Pittsburgh. You know, I as a kid, I liked the Pirates for some odd reason. But, mm-hmm. You know,
we'll forgive you.
It's an interesting area where our breweries are here in Chester County because we're 30 miles west of Philadelphia. And so just a little bit west of us, you see a pretty interesting mix of bumper stickers. You know, you see Phillies and Pirates. You see Eagles and Steelers. So
another real quick thing is that those short rib fries, are they the most addicting thing on the menu or what, Bill?
You know, I don't know if we could talk about it anymore unless we get Dennis and John up because, you know, we're going to drive them crazy.
Hey, I got to have something they don't. This boy lives down an hour from Walt Disney World. He's there all the time bragging. So I don't feel bad for John. Dennis, I feel bad, but not John.
But no, it's a tough one to to put down, because you got braised short ribs. They've been cooked for hours upon end. They just, you know, it's almost like a form of butter that's interacting with these French fries. It's a wonderful thing.
I mean, it just melts in your mouth. I mean, the thing of it is we went there expecting to have a great beer flight, enjoy it, but when you pull in, like, everybody in your restaurant just seems so happy. It's such a nice place. It's hard to explain. It's very festive, but it's not overbearing in there. The way you have it set up is, like, you can have a conversation, but it isn't – you know what I'm talking about? It's not super loud in there. It's a very comfortable place to have lunch, and it's, like, it's tucked back in that corner. We pulled in at first. We're like, now the restaurant's back there. Like, you guys are so well known in the neighborhood, but you don't really have a bunch of advertising around that area.
Sure. Well, you know, it's amazing because Walt Disney World excels at all aspects of environment and customer expectations. I mean, it's a delight at every turn. Whereas with us, we found a building that was perfectly suited for our brewing needs, and it was in a community that we felt could be very supportive of the products. We felt that the community could use a good restaurant. But, you know, it was in an old industrial complex, an old Pepperidge Farm bakery. So I feel that, like, you can't write this into any business book or business plan, but what you saw in that parking lot with sort of the old buildings and
phenomenal.
But I think your expectations get a little bit lowered as you're searching for parking and you're like, wait, can there really be a good restaurant in this 1940s industrial park? And then I think you get in the door and you see, you know, like-minded people having a good time, being chatty. The food is great. The place is warm and vibrant, and suddenly your expectations are right where you want them to be.
I was so happy. My wife walked through the door, and she you could just see the smile on her face, because my wife is, when it comes to food, she's not easy to please. Like, she knows what she likes, but we walked through the door, and she goes, "You smell that?" I said, "Yeah." She goes, "It smells so good in here," and we can't wait to sit down and eat. And it was like, it was our version of Cheers.
Yeah.
Nobody knew my name yet, but they will eventually, right? Over there. One of these days they'll be yelling Doug when I walk through the door, Dan.
Yeah.
That would be nice.
Bill,
John, you first.
All right, I was gonna ask you, I stopped at my local ABC liquor store this afternoon and was able to find a couple more of your beers, and I noticed that like Den said, with you've got Golden Monkey in both bottles and cans in different locations now, and some of your other beers that I saw there were now in cans. Are you kind of moving that direction, or are you splitting it half and half now, or what are you thinking with the canning instead of the bottling?
Thank you for that question. So we began our brewery with the bottling line. Cans were not really, you know, in line with craft beer in 1996, but we could see a trend forming. And, you know, I'll get back to a hospitality analogy, something that, you know, the folks at Disney understand so well. If your customer is looking for something in a certain size or a certain package, don't fight them on the issue, offer it to them. So we had a bias towards bottles. It's what we had always known. We had some concerns about cans because they do include a polymer lining. For all the research we've seen, there's no interaction with the beer itself. And so many people were moving towards cans. We saw the consumer base that we were serving getting very interested in cans. And let's face it, the transportability, the lightness of weight, the recyclability, there was a lot of things going for them. So in 2015, we installed a canning line, and we're not looking to replace our bottled lineup with a canned lineup, but we're looking to duplicate the options and maybe focus in on one or the other in the right marketplaces so that we're addressing what the consumer really wants to have in their hand.
Yeah, I think a lot of it has to do with, too, and tell me if I'm wrong, Bill, a lot of establishments find it safer to have beers in the cans than bottles on their premises, too. Like, when I bartended years ago, certain times of night, they would stop serving bottles because of crowd and stuff like that. So I don't know if maybe it's going that little bit of the trend, too, for that. Does that sound crazy to you?
No. Where it's obvious is outdoor venues where glass is really a bad idea, around swimming pools and so forth. So there's a few of those in Florida, right, John?
Yeah, absolutely. That's what I was going to mention is when I do head over to the world and stay at one of the resorts, I'm usually picking up a 6-pack or a 12-pack of something to have as my room beer. And I always look for cans because I'm taking it down to the pool. Yeah. So, with your can option, that will definitely rise any of your beers up on my list. So.
Yep, boating, golfing. I mean, you know, cans are definitely, they have their advantages for sure.
Oh, absolutely.
So, Bill, my next question for you is, so you got to tell me about V12. Before I found your beer finder, I was searching at my local, you know, stores up here, and I actually found it in my supermarket up here, and Doug was on me. We're going to try to get somebody on from Victory, you know, you got to find some of their beer, and, you know, so you'll be able to talk intelligently.
I'm pushing sales, Bill. Yeah, I'm pushing sales, buddy.
So I was looking, and I was almost ready to give up. I'm on my way out, and I look at this rack over in the corner where they had all of those single beers, and when I saw the Victory label, I was so happy, so I just grabbed it, didn't really look at it till I got it home, and I you know, looked at the label and discovered that it was...
We called him a lightweight, Bill. Yeah. What are you drinking that sissy beer for?
Oh, boy. 12% as the V12, which I didn't realize at the time that I bought it, represented. So how are you supposed to drink that? Like, just sip it with something else? Or, I mean, I ended up pouring a big old glass of it, and it was very good, and I was feeling very good not too long thereafter.
He kept calling me Danny for some reason, but I didn't question it.
Yeah, what's the story behind V12, and how are you supposed to attack something like that?
Well, you know, that's a great segue, because a lot of it has to do with the package itself. In 2002, when we upgraded our bottling line, we decided to go for some extra bells and whistles. Exactly that, meaning we had a 750 milliliter capability installed, so we could go from 12 ounces to the 750 milliliter bottle that the V12 is in. And that gave us the creative opportunity with that type of bottle that can withstand a little higher pressure to get into some bottle condition Belgian style ales and stronger higher gravity beers. So the package itself created the opportunity, and the 12 was, once we had the Golden Monkey sort of under our belt, and we were good at that, we wanted to push ourselves on the alcohol borders, and we took a beer up to 12% with some of the characteristics of Golden Monkey, but by no means were we trying to over leverage one creation and turn it into another. So the use occasion, well, how do you enjoy this? You know, as a big bottle, it really should be shared, and it's obviously not for taking out to the pool or on the golf course. That tells you something.
Yeah, yes.
So, you know, open it at home with a friend and have something nice to eat around it, so the effects can hit you slowly rather than rapidly, right? Is that how you did it?
No. So great advice, Bill.
Like I told you, he called me up, said, "Yo, Danny, when we doing that show?" And I said, "I'll talk to you tomorrow, buddy."
Well, you know, you called him buddy, all right? So you guys were messing up everybody.
There you go. And sure, you know, I didn't have the V12 that night. I'm just a little slow, that's all. But anyway, now tell some of our listeners about your different seasonal brews.
Sure. Well, you know, there's a tremendous opportunity to sort of sync things with the time of the year. You know, at least up here, at least, John, we actually get snow and we get cold. Dennis can tell you all about it. So there are beers that are appropriate for that. V12 being one of them. You know,
absolutely. You'll forget it's cold.
I'll drink those anyway. I'll just pretend like it's cold. So
okay.
That's a good answer. You know, our current seasonal it was discussed on your show, Kirsch Goza. So Kirsch is the German word for cherry, as you may know, and Goza is a style of beer that has gone extinct actually a couple of times, German style of beer from up near Leipzig And it's really been, to some extent, American craft brewers that revived it, or at least got it back on the radar screen. Very interesting style of beer because it uses a lactic fermentation wheat malt. Wheat tends to have or offer a bit more of a creamy mouthfeel. And then introduced into the beer is a bit of coriander seed and also salt. So then when we finish it with fresh Michigan cherry juice, you get this amazing sort of mouth-filling, velvety bridge from the wheat malt through the saltiness into the sweet cherry. And the whole thing comes in at only 4.7% alcohol by volume. So, you know, just after talking about the V12, I do want you guys to know that we are responsible sometimes too.
No, you most certainly are. I mean, I mean, all your flavor, it's amazing how you guys make so many different beers. I mean, I keep going out. I'm trying new ones every week, and I should be good till like next year sometime with all the different brews and different flavors that you guys have.
You know, the audience gives you your opportunities as brewmasters and entrepreneurs, right? If you cater to them and listen to them, they'll give you some idea of what they're interested in drinking. And if you pay attention to sales, obviously you can see what they reject. So it's really, we credit the audience with giving us the creative freedom to offer so many unique beers.
Now, Bill, do you know exactly how many beers you actually sell? I would imagine it fluctuates based on seasonal beers and stuff, but approximately how many different beers do you sell or have available?
So if you are at any one of our three brew pubs, obviously that's home, so it's easiest for to keep the beer. It's easy for us to keep the beers going there. You will see 20 to 30 beers on tap. So 20 is basically the target. You know, some of them are brewed like in our Kennett Square brew pub, where we have a very small 7-barrel system. We typically have 3 on draft that don't typically leave the premises there. So they're just for the house consumption. So we like to mix it up. We like to have a little bit of a different character to each of our 3 restaurant locations. And the beers are a big attraction of it. So it's a lot to manage, actually.
I mean, when I was at the pub, when I looked across the bar and looked at the tap, it kind of reminded you of the cockpit of a jet airplane for breweries. I mean, there were so many taps, it's like your head was spinning. I mean, there was just so many choices. It was incredible. And I like the way that you have the copper, the way the brewing barrels are. How did that design come about, Bill?
One of the installations, one of the brewery installations in 2004, so where you were sitting in Downingtown, behind the scenes was a brew house that was installed in 2004. And a gentleman that was part of the installation team, Peter, he lives not far from Bamberg, Germany, in Franconia. And he travels the world doing brewery installations. And he was doing an installation and dismantling an old copper brewery not far from his home in Franconia. And it was about the time we were planning our renovations for the Downingtown Brew Pub in 2007. And Peter gave us a call and said, "Hey, I got these beautiful copper domes from an antique brewery, and I feel like maybe you guys could use them." And we said yes. So we had them broken down and cut in half, essentially, very carefully, and then moved over here to us. And so you saw 2 halves over the bar, and then that one corner brewmaster's booth is one full copper kettle top.
Yeah, there was a nice family over there of about 12 sitting there eating when I was there. I'm like, look at those brew testers over there. But well, no, it's really cool.
That's our sort of Disney moment. People sit down in that brewmaster's booth, and they sort of like pat the seat and jump up and down like it's going to move. It's going to do something, right?
Bill, by the way, there might be a better job in the world than designing brew pubs, but I can't think of one off the top of my head. So,
how about designing rides for Disney?
Well, Imagineer wouldn't be too bad either, but.
Go ahead, Bill. John.
Looking at the future of craft brewing, I know a lot of things are moving towards like sour brews and stuff like that. And then I had the opportunity to try a New England style IPA last week, which was a rare find down here. But what do you see in the future for Victory Brewing? Which way are you guys heading?
That's a great question. We are not backing down on innovation. We have three brew houses of various size, down to our 7-barrel brew house in Kennett Square. And then we actually, in our Parksburg location, where we have a 200-barrel brew house, which is where what's creating most of the beers you're enjoying, we have an experimental 1/2-barrel brew house. So all the crazy ideas can be played out by ourselves and our brewing staff in order to experiment. So the experimentation won't slow down. But one of the things, and I don't want to sound like a dark cloud, one of the things I think all of us, the craft beer lovers and the craft beer producers, have to come to terms with is that there is a real crush of products on the retail shelves these days. And I think that a brewery, in order to travel, and I know the question came up like, geez, why can't we get Helles Lager up in Massachusetts? The fact of the matter is, not all beers should travel to all places. We're starting to see that in our craft beer world. So when we opened our doors and there were only 1,100 breweries in the United States, now that number is well over 5,300. So, you know, there's a lot of locals that have filled in places that were unoccupied before. And I think you'll have to see breweries sending more focused product lines further from home in order to remain relevant going forward.
Nice answer. Good answer.
Well, to go back to the Disney spin, when's the last time you were down there? What's your favorite resort that you like to visit at Disney World?
You know, we want to spend every moment in the park, of course. The most memorable time probably had more to do with the age of our family and such. The first resort we stayed in. We stayed in the 101 Dalmatians Hotel. And, you know, that was just a wonderful time with our youngest daughter. But we like to eat up all of our time in the park. And, you know, it's going to maybe sound silly, but the spinning on the Mad Teacup ride with my daughters is just an amazing memory that I want to relive often going forward. It's a small world, you know?
Yeah, I hear you. My wife drugged me on that, and I heard those voices for months afterwards, but I still can't wait to go back on with her again.
Yep.
Bill, and I, you know, I can imagine you said your daughters are teenagers now, and, you know, time goes by so fast, and those memories, and that's part of the reason I fell in love with Walt Disney World, because I too went down kicking and screaming, you know, not really wanting to go. But once I was exposed to the place and the atmosphere, I just fell in love with it for that very reason. Those times you can spend with your kids, they're not distracted by, you know, at least the time when we started going, everyone didn't have a cell phone in their face or were distracted by video games and other things. So those moments we could spend together as a family, and when my kids were a little younger, you know, we have and cherish those moments. To this day, we still talk about it. So I know exactly what you mean.
Yep, right there with you.
Now, do you find yourself when I know you visit Epcot before, when you've been down there with your children. Now, have you tried different beers from those countries as you're roaming around the parks? Do you do that or no?
You know, I'm probably going to give you an answer that's going to disappoint you guys as a brewmaster. But, you know, to Dennis's point, it's living in the moment with the family is really sort of what we're there for. So Epcot is, believe it or not, one of the parks we've spent the least amount of time in.
Okay.
And, you know, gosh, you're giving me a good reason to just put my wife in the car and drive down there and just do it alone and have some of those beers and have a good
time. If you need somebody to show you around, just give me a ring ding. I'm out there almost every weekend. So.
Well, to be honest with you, Bill, you should head down. Have you ever heard of the – have you ever been down there during the Food and Wine Festival?
I have not, but I have heard wonderful things. So, yeah, I realize it's a whole world of entertainment options. And really, we've just focused on the parks with the girls, and there's a lot more we can learn. So I will be calling you, John.
No problem.
You will actually love that, you and your wife, because they have all different food and beer pairings around, different foods from around the world. At World Showcase, and it's a really good time that you and your wife could have down there.
I believe that. I was fortunate to be hanging out with a wonderful chef who now calls Kansas City home. Her name is Selena Teo, and she has a place called Julian and the Belfry in Kansas City. And she grew up in this area outside of Philadelphia, but her big jump start really was working with Disney after her first jobs in this area. So, yeah, the culinary chops within the program are there for sure.
No, it's beautiful. I mean, they've even opened up since you've been there now. They have the whole Disney Springs area, which it's basically an adult playground now with all the restaurants. Wouldn't you guys agree with me? I mean, there's so many different restaurants and things to do down there. The guys here, we call it the Fifth Gate now because, I mean, it's a beautiful place to hang out at.
Yeah, wow. A lot of new restaurants and little kiosks around the area where you can, like John was saying, you can pair different foods with wines and beer. And that's what I was going to ask you, too. It seems that over the years it used to be, you know, literally food and wine. But now I see down in Walt Disney World and even back home here in several places.
More beer pairings.
Yeah, that people, you know, with the different taste of beers and, you know, it's not just your Coors and your Bud Light and all that stuff, where beer has so much flavor that you can pair beer with food and it makes a difference. Do you sell to a lot of restaurants and they're looking for a certain flavor or a beer?
Yeah, I mean, we've all lived through an amazing renaissance in beer. And, you know, just as it grabbed headlines when American wines beat French wines in 1976, I guess, was that competition.
Right.
Similarly, American craft brew has really elevated the status of American brewing around the world. And there are countries looking at what we're doing now. So long story short, yes, craft beer belongs in restaurants and it can really add to a tremendous experience. And getting back to a practical aspect of it, you know, we talked about the V12 and most wines are 12% and so, you know, there's a limit to how much of that you can put into yourself. And, you know, we just were talking earlier about our Kirsch Goza, a cherry-infused sour ale at 4.7%. So you're getting, you know, fruit flavors, you're getting tartness, things you might normally have gotten out of a wine, but you're getting it at 4.7% with effervescence. That's a real challenge to wine, isn't it?
Yes, yes.
And then you even have your flavors like, I mean, this is one of the ones I want to try next is the cream ale, the cold beer, the cold brew coffee. I haven't tried that yet, and I'm really looking forward to trying that. And would you consider that – what's the flavors on that, Bill? Would that be more of kind of like a dessert beer, or how would you recommend that?
I think you'll be surprised by it. Number one, it's light in color. The cream ale style is sort of a deep golden. And so the other thing that's going to surprise you is when you raise it to your lips, your nose is going to tell you coffee right away.
Awesome.
And your mouth is not going to taste any of the acrid, over-roasted qualities that you get in coffee. We worked with a roaster near us, One Village Coffee Roasters in Souderton, Pennsylvania. And specifically, these guys were going for a very light roast that was going to express more of the nut and fruit flavors that you can find in a coffee bean. So it's a very surprising beer. Light in body, light in color, bold in the coffee nose, but then almost nutty, creamy in the overall flavor.
So, yeah, Bill, what you're saying is it's a breakfast beer. It's coffee, right?
Yes, it is.
On vacation. We'll preference it that way. Yes, how's that sound, Bill? Yes. Drink responsibly. But no, but out of the parks, what's your favorite park, Bill?
Man, I don't – you know, I've just bounced around and enjoyed the whole experience. I think it's the Magic Kingdom, just because of it's got all of the allure of the Disney magic, you know.
It's just the pure beauty of it. When you're walking down Main Street, it's just special, is what it is. And the thing is, me, because I'm a general contractor by day, and when you look at all the effort and the beauty of, like I always say, the confectionery store with all the detail of it costs more than building a normal house. the way it's done.
Yeah. And it's funny because, you know, obviously we are restaurateurs. We have three restaurant operations. So we pay attention to those details and what's important to a customer and, you know, making all of those things polished and to the level that Disney is capable of. It is very immersive. Main Street, every aspect of it. It's, you know, I think there's a lot of business owners that can appreciate Disney on a different level because we know what it takes to run a good show.
And I'm not even just because you're on the show, I'm not saying this, but I said to the guys, like, I go to a lot of restaurants. I just went to, and I'll say it, I don't care. We went to Gordon Ramsay's for Christmas, and I love Gordon Ramsay. Hell's Kitchen and the chef, me and my wife watch all his stuff. And when we went to his restaurant at Caesars, we did it as it was like a Christmas present to each other. We're going to go make this really nice night out. And it didn't have that at-home atmosphere. It didn't have the polish that you guys – when we got to your restaurant, it felt right. It felt like you were – it had a feeling to it. And it's hard to explain, but it's kind of like that feeling you get when you're at the parks at one of the restaurants there. Like there's no way to explain it, but it just felt home. It felt inviting. It felt like you guys cared. You're – like I said, the waiter, I cannot remember his name, and I feel so horrible. But he was phenomenal. I mean – anything I said to him, he had like – he knew every meal on the menu. He knew every beer on the menu. And he really did you guys justice by the way he was a server. I mean, I'm telling you. And that's the difference that you guys get. Me and Dennis and John call it the Disney difference. And that's the way I felt when I was in your pub.
Well, you know, I'm glad it worked for you, as it does for most of our guests. I feel that, you know, our folks – our team members, they are enjoying the vibe that is created by our customers and our products. And this sort of the Disney experience also takes me back to my first beer garden experience in 1987 when Ron and I went over there for a trip. And, you know, you brought it up earlier, comfort. And family feels comfortable, feels safe in that environment. It's meant for celebration at a good pace. So I think that when you dive into it, hospitality is actually very simple. And it's about providing comfort. And Disney in general provides not only the comfort, but also the theatrics that, you know, push you over the edge. There's a wow factor.
Well, I think what it is that that you're – all your employees, and I think this is what makes Disney so great, is your employees, you could tell they believe in what you guys are doing, if that makes sense to you. Like, all the hostesses were great. They were talking to us about the beer. I bought a 12-pack before I left. We were talking about the food, and the girls are going, oh, my God, isn't that good? And you could tell it wasn't, like, made up. They truly believed in what they were telling us, and you can tell that. And don't you guys agree with me?
Absolutely.
Yeah, they weren't putting on an act, and, you know, they seemed – it sounds like they seemed that they were
it was authentic.
Yeah, there you go. That's the word I was looking for.
So I guess, you know, in response, I'm going to fall back on the word comfort because, you know, in that situation, everyone's comfortable. They're all essentially equal. Yes, some of us are working to provide you, the guest, with an experience, but it's in an environment where we can interact and we can talk about things genuinely because – you know, number one, the beer is kind of exotic and it's interesting. And geez, you worked your way back through this old warehouse district and you found the place. So there's a lot of little factors that add up to comfort, but comfort shouldn't be just for the guest alone. It should be the community that's interacting.
No, I mean, like I said, I can't wait to go back there. So I want more comfort. So when are we going to get you back down to Disney World, Bill?
Well, geez, you know, after this Barstool session, I'm going to have to explain to my wife what I've been doing for the last 45 minutes. And that might start a trip booking really quickly. You never know.
Well, if you need a trip booked, well, I know a guy that can help you.
Yeah, you know two guys that can help you, by the way, but that's okay. Bill, by the way, I just opened Gold Monkey, and man, that's one fine beer.
Goodness, he couldn't resist. He couldn't resist.
Yeah, I had to hit my last one, so that's good stuff.
So that's Bill,
make sure you got a bar stool with four legs.
So
exactly.
Is there anything coming up, any events you want to publicize or anything like that, Bill, before we let you go? Because we kept you on plenty long. We don't want to keep you too long. We don't want to get your wife mad at you.
No worries. We serve such a large audience. Our beers are actually available in 36 states. So some of the things that are close to home won't be pertinent to everybody who might be listening. I would say that, you know, weather's warming up and our summer love, it's a beautiful 5.2% golden ale that has some of the sort of comfortable qualities of a continental lager with the Tettnanger hops there, the German-grown hops in the middle, but then the really fruity, lemony citrus hops there in the end. That's a great way to experience the best of Victory wherever you might be enjoying summer.
No, absolutely. I mean, there's a beer for everyone out that you guys have something that will make everybody enjoy a beer. I can tell you that much. Dan, you have any other questions for Bill?
No, I'm good. He was a very, very great guest, and I learned a lot tonight. And thank you, Bill. Thank you for being on and sharing your knowledge with us.
So welcome, yes.
So everybody, if you want to contact Bill, head over to victorybrewingcompany.com or go to your local liquor store and find the Victory Brew. You can find John at Beer Solo or the Weekly Pint. You can find Dennis at Oak Manor. You can find me at Good Old Grumpy 6767. You can find us all at WDW Main Street. Everybody have a great week. Be safe, and we'll talk to you soon.
Good night.
Good night. Good night.
Pleased to meet you. Fine, how are you? Nice seeing you. How you come on? How to do? Pretty good show is your born. Pretty good show is your born. Pretty good show is your born. How do you do? Not a pleasant meeting. How do you do? Same way we meet. How do you do? With everyone peeping. Pretty good show is your born. What goes up the show to come down? A penny lost is a penny found. How do you do? And you had it back. A little bit of this and a little bit of that. How do you do?
Hi, how are you?
Fine, how are you?
Good to see you.
How you come on?
Howdy!
Pretty good show is your bone. Stop jumping around, you're running out of breath. Why don't you sit back and calm yourself? You can carry on now if you must. Wonder what we like, cause that suits us. How do you do? Not a pleasant meeting. Pretty good show is your bone. Pretty good show is your bone. I'm looking for a little more adventure. He's heading for a little bit of fun now. I'm hoping for a little more excitement. Time to be moving along. It's time to be moving along. The weather is good, the fishing is fine. Now what do you do with all of your time?
Oh, a zig, zag, a zag, a twos and a froze. That's what you ask me, and that's what you know.
Time to be moving along. Time to be moving along. He's looking for a little more adventure.
I'm heading for a little bit of fun now.
He's hoping for a little more excitement. Time to be moving along. It's time to be moving along. Time to be moving along.
He's looking for a little more adventure, but he's heading for a little bit of trouble. He's heading for a little bit of danger. Time to be turning around. Hey, Brer Rabbit, better mend your ways. You're heading for trouble one of these days. Warning this rabbit, I'm afraid as always. He's making his way to the laughing place. He's looking for a little more adventure, but he's heading for a little bit of trouble. He's heading for a little bit of danger. Time to be turning around. Careful bear rabbit, better mend your ways. You're heading for trouble one of these days. Warning this rabbit, I'm afraid it's a waste. He's making his way to the laughing place. He's heading for a little bit of danger. Time to be turning around. Time to be turning around. Today. Don't you worry, Mr. Bluebird. I learned my lesson. The briar patch is where you were born, and the briar patch is where you're gonna stay. One of these days, I gotta thank Brer Fox and Brer Bear for flinging me back home to my briar patch.
Zippity-doo-dah, zippity-ay. Brer Fox and Brer Bear are gonna get it today. Zippity-doo-dah, zippity-ay. Today.
always knew that he'd get away. He's had enough of moving on now. It's where he's born and bred in. The briar patch is where he's at. And zippity-doo-dah, zippity-dah. Wonderful feeling.